Off the Ball on News Talk 106 to 108.
I'm prepared to anything I can to play comfortably again.
Do it then.
What about your start to the game?
It wasn't bad, was it?
Why should an honest answer be a mistake?
How can a modern day manager not have a mobile phone?
Why should he?
Welcome along to the Football Show. It's busy. We'll talk to Mark Ogden in Manchester. Interesting times at both Manchester City and Manchester United. It would seem that City want to throw 60 million in the way of Arsenal and €440,000 a week to Alexis Sanchez. We'll talk to Mark Ogden about that and a rejuvenated Jose Mourinho looking fresh and
sharp.
Happy.
Yeah.
Again, his suit was nice. A new white shirt and the bags under the eyes weren't as pronounced and a nice tan.
You love all that, don't you?
I think it's important.
He's looking well.
I think he turned up at Old Trafford last year looking a bit miserable and I think he's back.
Yeah, he looked happy.
Now, Kev, I don't want to be biased here, but I mean, there was one standout goal from the weekend, quite clearly.
Yeah.
Cork. Brady.
The commentator, though, didn't actually think it was Stephen Ward. Didn't think Ward could have done that. It was Brady he gave the credit to there.
Yeah, harsh.
That's outrageous.
Harsh.
Yeah.
Total belief in him as well.
Yeah. Stephen Ward, did you hear about that? The co-commentator called it Brady?
How's it going, lads? You all right?
Hi, Stephen.
No, I didn't hear that, but I've got to be honest with you. When I came home, my little boy said the same thing to me. He said, are you sure it wasn't Robbie Brady that scored that goal?
Oh, dear.
He was listening to Talk Sports, so I was like, no, it was me, son. So, I'm not surprised I got it mixed up.
No, fair play. Nathan Murphy actually described it in the top three Irish goals in Premier League history.
Wow.
That's what Nathan Murphy described it as, yeah.
Wow.
Mm. Yeah, I'll take that. I don't think I'll get one better for the rest of my career, so I'll cling on to that one for a while. Lads.
What age is your son?
6.
Okay, so cheeky.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think he's still in disbelief, to be honest.
So, do you know what, though? The best thing about that goal, and it said a lot about Burnley and their ambition, and, okay, it's obviously not the best thing. The strike was the best thing in the move, but it was from that free kick where you could have easily gone long and pumped it into the box. It was a short free and it was you bombing on down the left-hand side against Chelsea at Stamford Bridge. Like, that spoke volumes about the way you went about your business there.
To be honest, it wasn't something that was initially planned. I think more so, when they went down to 10 men, it obviously gave us an numerical advantage. And, the manager straight away from the sideline, wanted us to take things quick and get the ball moving. And I think even for the third goal as well, we took a short free kick and got another cross in that ended up with Volksy score.
Yeah.
So, we obviously went there with a game plan and, a side like ourselves like to make it a bit uncomfortable for teams. But I think once they went out to 10 men, we showed that we can use the ball well as well. And I think that came across with a couple of the goals that we scored last night.
Yeah, we had Pat Nevin on the show Monday night and he suggested that the way that you'd stopped Chelsea, Stephen, when they went down to 10 men was you kind of man-marked Cesc Fabregas, you stopped him dictating play. Was that something that you'd mentioned pre-match or even maybe at half-time then as the game progressed, stopping Fabregas and you stopped Chelsea?
I think it was something we mentioned throughout the week, really. Obviously, even with 11 men, we know he can be the focal point for a lot of, their attacks. So, it wasn't so much let's get a man on him and man-mark him. It was just more so when he gets to get as tight as you can and, force them to play sideways or backwards if possible, because there was times in the game even when they had 10 men he was putting balls over the top and they were nearly getting in, so we knew how dangerous he was, but I felt like we frustrated him throughout the game and he probably got a little bit frustrated but the lads were in and around him all the time and fortunately for us he got himself turned off as well, which helped us in the last 10 minutes or so.
You seemed very in control of that situation in the build-up to the goal where, you played it inside and you kept moving up the line and as you chested the ball up for yourself, you looked in no rush, very, very kind of composed and relaxed and I don't know, were you just kind of working off instinct or because really you shouldn't be shooting from out there all that often, but it seemed to sit up nicely for you and you had a pop. Can you remember much of what your thought process was?
Not really. I think, Kev will probably tell you himself sometimes, in a game, you just get into these positions and it does take over. I think, You know, when the ball bounced up, it bounced up nicely, and I just thought, you know, why not? I'll have a crack. Mm. And, you know, as I say, thankfully, it went into the far corner. Could have gone into Rose there, and I probably would have had the gaffer, you know, hammer me for not just lobbing it into the back stick. So, you know, one of them things. Thankfully, it went my way on Saturday. You know, I don't know if I'll end up in that position again, you know, in a few games' time.
Now, to be fair, Steve, Joel makes a point as well about the two goals that you did score from the quick free kicks. You know, you taking the quick free kick, but you kind of, you're a side at times that are criticised for perhaps being a little bit too defensive minded and everything. But when you actually go and watch it, I watched you maybe five or six times. It was actually at Turf Moor when I saw you play last season, and how forward thinking you are. You get forward down one side, whether it be Lowton at the other side. You do like to get forward and you do like to attack in numbers when you are. I mean, you can be, maybe if one fullback goes, it's the old adage where the other fullback will tuck round, but you do like to get forward yourself. You do get yourself in advanced positions. And I did like it when you got beyond Kante, had the awareness to shrug Kante off, get the strike him, because you got your head up to see there was nobody else in support of you. But can you give us any sort of insight into what sort of Sean Dyche would say to you on the pitch about you getting forward? Because, as I said, at times, it unjustifiably so, you kind of considered a negative side, and it's poor when people actually don't watch you and see how you play.
Yeah, I think obviously, listen, there's only snippets on Match of the Day and on highlight shows, and like you said, you know, one thing our gaffer always says, he knows we're not going to go out and pass every team off the pitch in the Premier League, and we need to find other ways of, you know, disrupting their play and making them comfortable for them, and he likes to call it mixed football, really, where you know, you might need to, you know, get it into the big man and play off that, and, you know, get it in behind teams. But then when you can, play encourages us to play. And I think, you know, if you look at the players we have in midfield now, you know, the players he's brought in, and obviously Robbie Jeff, you know, we've got Jack Cork in from Swansea, Ashley Westwood from Villa, who, you know, are all very, very tidy footballers. So, you know, there is that ability in the team, and I think it just adds another string to our bow, really, that we can go, you know, forward to the big lads, but, you know, also we can play. That's what the manager encourages to do. He also, you know, doesn't encourage us to play too much football, because he knows that if we go to Man United and try to take them on at their own game, then, you know, 80-90% of the time they're going to come out on top, because that's, you know, why they're at the Man U's, and to sustain the league and, you know, to become a regular club in the Premier League, we need to have different ways of picking up points, you know, both at home and on the road.
Yeah, your celebration was a beautiful mix of absolute delight on your face, and also you were making eye contact with other players as if to say, "No, I know this is a bit unusual as well."
Yeah, I think it was more shock. I don't think it was a bit of shock. And I just obviously seen one of the lads, and I think I was laughing at his face. I don't think he could believe what had happened.
Yeah. So I ask you this, fully aware that you still have to play Chelsea at Turf Moor, and I'm not trying to get you in trouble or fish for headlines or anything, but did you feel they were slightly off it in comparison with previous visits to Chelsea? Because, you know, something maybe not quite right there. They haven't quite got their act together. You know, did they feel kind of like they were there for, not there for the taking, but maybe there was something not quite right? Or what was your experience in comparison to previous years going to Stamford Bridge?
It's difficult to say, really, because, you know, last year we went there early in the season and it was probably the toughest game we had. They turned us over 3-0 and, you know, they were streets ahead of us. And then they had a bit of a bad patch where I think they went to Arsenal and lost 3-0 or 4-0. And the manager then changed the system and they went on to win the league. So,
yeah.
Listen, I think for us going down there, we probably went to Chelsea at the right time. You know, obviously the saga with Costa, Pedro was injured, Hazard was injured, Moses was suspended. They just sold Matic. So, you know, from our point of view, you know, we probably gave us a lift, you know, the players that you know, went there. But, you know, if you've still seen the last 15 minutes of the game with 9 men, they were still probing and, you know, getting everyone forward and sort of trying to create chances. So, listen, they'll be right up there. It's obviously, I think things probably went our way in terms of the sending off. But, you know, I'm glad we capitalised on it. But, you know, it was still mentally draining, the tough game, trying to keep them at bay for the, you know, the 90 minutes.
Yeah, you know, another thing as well, Stephen, which we did speak about as well, Joe and I were speaking about it earlier, getting off to first game of the season, away win on the board, because That pressure must have been mounting on your last season when you kept getting reminded of your away record. You were so good at home, you couldn't necessarily get that win over the line when you went away from home. How refreshing is that for you now that you've got that first win out of the way, that when you are now in your pre-match press conferences, your pre-match interviews, you're not constantly getting reminded of your away record?
Yeah, I think it's obviously massive. You know, it's no secret the problems we had on the road last year, and I think especially away from home after Christmas, we probably played a lot better than we got credit for. And unfortunately, things just didn't go away. And, you know, we didn't pick up the results until, you know, obviously we went to Crystal Palace and you know, ultimately got the win that probably kept us in the league. But, you know, even there, you know, you look at, you know, people were speaking our first three away fixtures at Chelsea, Tottenham and Liverpool this season. So to go there and get a result will give us massive confidence for them next two away games and hopefully for the rest of the season.
So we were looking on at Burnley, and most people were, and certainly the eye-catching stuff, like Johnny Walters coming in, so, you know, the Irish contingent grows, and that's really great for all you guys, I'm sure. Losing Andre Gray and Michael Keane, two huge losses, and so people looked at that, they looked at the away form, and the general conclusion they reached was this is going to be a much, much tougher season for Burnley, and they were a lot of people's relegation candidates. Have you, I guess you can see where they're coming from, have you kind of steeled yourself that this is going to be a tougher season, even tougher than last year, or what are your targets or expectations for the season ahead, Stephen?
Well, targets, hopefully we can, you know, stay in the league and do even better than last year. But, you know, I think, you know, it's been said before about this sort of, you know, second season syndrome where, you know, you're not a surprise or a shock to anyone anymore. And you know, we spoke a lot about that in pre-season. The gaffer, you know, obviously we're renowned for being a 4-4-2 team usually. You know, two men up front and get the ball forward quick. But, you know, we've brought in players that you know, are going to enable us to adapt, hopefully. And I think that's the one thing the manager has looked at. He doesn't want us to be sort of a one-trick pony and teams to sort of, you know, find out our weaknesses from last year, really. We need to, you know, we need to have different areas to our game. And listen, we're under no illusions. It's going to be a really tough season. You know, you look at the money that's been spent by every club, you know, even the clubs down the sort of lower half of the league. So I'm sure there'll still be business going for ourselves and probably for our teams before the window closes. But, yeah. You know, the strength of our group is the one thing that gives us a great chance. You know, I know obviously we've lost two really influential players and two great lads in the dressing room.
Yeah.
And obviously Keno and Andre. But, you know, Johnny coming in has been great. And, you know, I'm sure they're probably looking at another striker. And, you know, I think that the core of the group has always been the same and always been strong. And hopefully, you know, with lads going, it gives other players an opportunity to come in.
Yeah.
You know, like Tarkey who's come in at the back. And, you know, hopefully if we can have another successful year.
Yeah. You mentioned there the money going around in football at the moment. We're kind of looking at, geez, wondering if this is some kind of bubble, like it's out of control. And it's not just the Neymar deal, obviously. Is it the talk of the dressing room this summer as well? Are lads looking at all the signings and all the figures being bandied about, thinking, what is going on here?
Yeah, definitely, yeah. I think it's gone crazy, to be honest. I think, obviously, Neymar, the one everyone, you know, speaks about. But I think even, you know, you look at ourselves, you know, as our manager, you know, says we're in a different area of the market to a lot of teams. And even the money that we're, you know, being asked to pay for players, you know, is outrageous. And it's, you know, sometimes it's unjustified. And that's probably one of the main reasons, you know, a club like Burnley had to let, you know, the likes of Michael Keane and Andre Gray go, because the money being offered for players going into the last year of their contract was too good to turn down. And, you know, that's just football at the minute. And, you know, I think even clubs in the Championship are spending, you know, crazy money trying to make it up to the Premier League. So, you know, it's just probably going to keep going and going and going. I think, you know, obviously it's so big around the world, and it's you know, global franchises now. It's just, you know, I can't see any way it's going to stop, really, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, countries even. I saw you signed a new two-year deal during the week, so you're obviously knocking on Dyche's office saying, here, boss, sort me out.
No, I was just going to say that. I was going to add to that, though, Steve. You're 31 now. You just signed a new two-year contract, potentially with another year as well on top of that. 30, 31, I certainly felt it from my own age. It's a strange age. What am I going to do? Am I hitting my peak? Am I getting to maybe fall down the ladder? I'm going to have to start thinking about other things.
Yeah.
It's a strange age I felt. I'm speaking to other players as well. It's a strange age when you get to. But you've played all but one Premier League game last season. You look lean, you look sharp, you start the season well. So it's got to give you that confidence, well, particularly the way that you've played throughout this campaign for Ireland as well. You have to, I mean, I'd look at it outside looking in at you as well. You've got to have enough confidence in yourself now over the next two or three seasons. You're going to keep Burnley in the Premier League, stay in the Premier League, and of course then try and add to the, what is it, 44 caps I think you've got now as well with the Ireland setup as well.
Yeah, you're right, though, Kev. It is a strange sort of age, you know, I think. I've still had a year left. And, you know, even in negotiation, you know, clubs are now talking to you about your age and, you know, how long you've got left and so forth. Yeah, listen, it is strange. But obviously, I feel as fit as I ever have, I think. You know, the way we train at Burnley and the way, you know, the sports science team look after ourselves. I've never trained like, to be honest. You know,
what are the big differences maybe with even 4 or 5 years ago?
Just everything. I feel like from a personal point of view, just the intensity that we train, like it probably took me 3 or 4 weeks to get up to speed with when I first came in, and you can see that with every player that comes in. It's just, you know, it's the same sort of in how we play. You know, the manager is mad on fitness, wants us to be the fittest team. If we can't be, you know, technically the best team, he at least wants us to be able to outwork teams. And probably the first time I've really trained like that in my career. Other clubs has been a little bit more laid back. So, you know, I feel as fit as ever, as, you know, strong as ever. And I suppose I think one of the things, Kev, will probably tell yourself, you know, you learn a lot through experience. And I feel like you know, the older I get, the more I'm still learning about the game. And I think it can help you both ways, both on and off the pitch. So yeah. I'm just trying to cling on and play as many years as possible. I think that's what gets in your head once you get over the 30 years old.
I just want to say, just in positional sense as well, yeah. Steve, you were very much, like you say, you were that attacking player coming over from Ireland as well, playing different systems. You've played in the left wing as well, but now you actually are considered a left back. You would really get pushed forward in games as well now. Even when you were playing left back at Wolves, you'd play the odd game at centre forward, weren't you? But now all of a sudden, that's your position, and you just feel, or you look so at ease when you're actually playing the games now, when you're playing at international level against different players, when you are playing at club level now, it looks easy for you now in playing that position. So how long do you think it's taken you to actually fully master the position or fully feel comfortable in that position?
To be honest, I still feel like there's parts that you learn every year. You know, I think obviously when I started there, Mick, you know, was great with me, you know, gave me a great base to work on from left back. It probably then, you know, like you said, being at Wolves, I've probably, you know, being sort of that utility man that if someone was injured, I could play, you know, centre forward, you know, midfield, anywhere. And I probably did get moved around a little bit more. And it probably only has been since I moved away and went to Brighton on loan and then obviously moved to Burnley that, you know, they signed me as a left back. They never looked at me as anything else. And obviously, you know, working with the manager here, he's been great for us. I think as a back five, you know, being a centre half himself, he takes pride in how we work as a unit. And, you know, works a lot throughout the week, and I feel like that's you know, probably the one of the times in my career where it's really been that, you know, attention to detail on the back four. And, you know, I feel like it's really helped me. And I think, you know, you look at the likes of Michael Keane, who came in as a young lad and, you know, had been at Man United for years and probably, you know, wasn't really in as matured as a player as he could have been. And the gaffer took him under his wing and he just went from strength to strength. And I feel like that's been the same with a lot of us in the squad.
It's a very interesting point Kev makes about being 31, 32, 30 when you're signing deals. It's not really an age you hear players talk that much about. So you've signed a 2-year deal now at 31. Is it that Burnley wouldn't want to give you more than a 2-year deal, or as a player, would you not want to sign more than a 2-year deal because at 33 you can still negotiate another 2-3 years? Like, what are the club? Do the club want to get you down for 3-4 years at this age, or do they not want to give you anything more than 2 years? And are you looking for a bit longer, or how does that generally play out when a player gets to 31, 32?
I think the perception, especially in England, is that, you know, once you get to that age, you're lent the contract. You know, the length that, like, usually becomes a little bit shorter.
Yeah.
You know, I think you look at, you know, the 24, 25. You know, it's easy for a club to give you a 4-5 year deal.
Right.
I think, you know, sort of the closer you get to 30, 31, 32, I think it becomes 2 year, 1 year with options and so forth. And
so would you have, in a perfect world, would you have liked a 3 or 4 year deal? But that's just not the reality anymore. Is that kind of where it was?
It's either that, Stephen, or you do what Hunty does and you doctor your Wikipedia page and take a couple of years off yourself. That's what you need to have done.
I did half think of doing that. You know, 15 to play forever, that fella. So a bit cross the line, but no, listen, it's one of them things. The club came to you. You know, there's a policy there. I think they've done the same with Joey Barton last year. Obviously, it was gracious, but you know, they had a policy where, you know, players of that age, they only wanted it off it only a year, and he ended up going up to Rangers.
Yeah.
You know, for whatever reason, he ended up coming back. But listen, it's not a problem. I'm just glad to be fit and healthy and, you know, be playing. And obviously, if I do well, you know, hopefully, you know, they'll give me another year on top of if these 2 years go well. And you just take it from there. And if not, you know, hopefully you've done well enough to get another contract somewhere else. So it's not a big deal, really, and it's not something I worry about too much, but it is nice to have that security of the extra year after this season.
Yeah.
How do you feel then? You know, you're saying that you feel fit as ever. We've got the two big games coming up, Georgia just at the start, and is it the second? I think second and fifth, I think, Georgia and Serbia. Two big games, and there's going to be a lot thrown at you in the next few weeks, particularly when you get over here as well. So what's the feeling, particularly with the lads that you've got there, you and the other four lads that you've got there in the squad? How do you feel going towards those two games?
Yeah, to be honest, we spoke about it the other day. We were just you know, obviously talking about the games. I think Folksy was saying that he's got his itinerary through from Wales. So I think there's a massive excitement in the squad. I think, you know, I know it's an old cliche, but it is the business end of the group stages. I think these next two games, if we can, you know, put absolutely everything into them and come out with, you know, some really positive results, then, you know, we're going to give ourselves a massive chance of winning the group. And, you know, that's what everyone wants to do. You know, nobody really wants to go through the playoffs. We want to prove that we're good enough to go and win the group. And, you know, they're going to be two tough games. But, you know, I think, you know, the lads and the way the group's gone so far, and especially with the Serbia game at home, we should have every confidence that we can take maximum points. So, you know, it's going to be tough. But, you know, there's excitement there. And lads know that if we put in the hard work and, you know, do the business in these next two, then going into next month, we'll make the job hopefully a little bit easier on ourselves.
I think there has been a bit of criticism that's been thrown at the team, though, hasn't there, really, from the performance-wise? But the results have been very good. I still feel as though there's more to come from probably everyone, and that I'd see that as a positive thing. I really would. And the criticism I feel as though that's been levelled at the team, particularly maybe you look at the last Georgia game at home when it wasn't a great performance, but it's job done. Win, get that done over the line, and you're moving on and moving forward. So, particularly with this Georgia game, what do you think then going into that with your own mindset? Do you feel as though, like, we approach the game, get out, try to get the job done early, try to get a goal early, whatever it would be? How do you think? Because Georgia's always one of those games where it's been a grind, but we seem to have the upper hand of them for some reason.
Yeah, it is. Listen, it's going to be a tough game. I think, you know, logistically and everything, it's a tough place to go to. It's not only around the corner. It's a good flight away. You know, time difference and so forth. But, you know, I don't see why we shouldn't go there, you know, with confidence to win. You know, I think sometimes in these groups, as you know yourself, Kev, the games aren't always pretty. You know, even against, you know, you look at the Wales game. It was a fairly dour game. Both teams canceling each other out.
Yeah.
You know, ended up being a scoreless draw. And I think that can be the case in a lot. There's so much on the games that, you know, sometimes there can be that tension. Players, you know, don't want to make mistakes. They want to just, you know, keep the game tight. And as I say, you know, the performances maybe haven't been the way some people would have liked, or maybe we'd have liked ourselves, but we're in an unbelievable position. I think if you'd have told us we'd be here with four games to go, you know, 4 points ahead of Wales and Austria and level with Serbia, I think, you know, no one would have said no to that. So, you know, hopefully we can put performances in and get results, you know, combined. But I think most importantly is making sure that we give ourselves the best chance of qualifying. And when we do that, then you regroup and you go away. And hopefully, you know, as I say, you can look in detail at the performances and maybe where we can all improve.
Mm. Listen, we've kept you more than long enough.
Yeah,
so
thanks
so much for your time, and best of luck, obviously, over the next couple of weeks and certainly with Ireland as well. One last point is from Dews in Cork, who's texted in to say, it's all well and good doing it at Stamford Bridge, but tell Mark, can he do it on a wet Monday night in Burnley? So that's a fair point. Less of the fancy stuff at the bridge. Do it at a wet night in Turf Moor.
I'll do my best, lad.
Good man. Thanks a million.
Cheers, guys. Take care.
Cheers. Stephen Ward there after, well, not a bad opening weekend. Scores a screamer.
Cracking goal, isn't it?
Son says, was it Robbie Brady? Brings you right back down to earth straight away. All notions gone. Celtic are cruising.
5-0. Goalkeeper hasn't looked the best, I have to say, for Astana. But the way that Astana started, they started actually giving Celtic a few problems, but Celtic just too dominant. Yeah. Poor display.
Game over.
Yeah, game over. That's it now, yeah.
5-0. Champions League football beckons. We are talking to Mark Ogden, based in Manchester next, about both City and United.
Off the ball, thanks to Air. Watch all of Ireland's matches in the Women's Rugby World Cup live on Air Sport during August.
You're welcome, Max. So I just noticed in that text message I read it from Dews in Cork. Thanks a lot, Dews in Cork, by the way. So I said, I just read the text verbatim to Stephen Ward, which said, it's all well and good doing it at the Bridge, but please ask Mark, can he do it on a Monday night in Burnley?
Yeah.
And I was wondering why Stephen...
Think about what you're saying sometimes, Joe. That's what it is, isn't it?
I had a bit of a pause after I read that, as if to say...
What's it about?
Who's Mark? Way to go, Dews. Thanks for that. Thanks for that. As spotted nicely by JP in the box as well. Dews and JP hung me out to dry there.
Yeah.
Our next guest, thankfully, is called Mark. Mark Ogden is on the line. Evening, Mark.
Hi, guys.
How you doing? So, interesting times at both Manchester clubs. We might start with City. There's been certainly murmurings, and more than murmurings, of their interest in Alexis Sanchez, and the figures are suitably eye-watering. 60 million for Arsenal must be very tempting when he's in the final 12 months of his contract, and potentially 400 grand sterling a week. So they're going after Sanchez hard enough here.
Yeah, but I don't think they'll get him. I think that Arsene Wenger's made it pretty clear that Sanchez stays. And I think even if Arsenal get offered 60 million for Sanchez, I think if they qualify for the Champions League with Sanchez, then it makes it worthwhile, because if they sell Sanchez, I don't think they get in the Champions League. So, you know, they either get £60 million by selling him, or they get £60 million plus by keeping him and qualifying for the Champions League. And if they keep him, who knows, if they have a good start to the season and challenge, they might persuade him to stay and sign a new contract. So he likes London. It's not a case of not being happy where he is. London is a big thing for Sanchez, and I think his issue is the ambition at the Emirates and the chance of winning things. So if they give it a real go for the Premier League this season, then that might persuade him to stay.
It's interesting you say London there, because it's something Joe and I have spoke about over the last year or so, about the northern clubs over there in England, Mark, potentially getting a little bit weaker in the next few years because of the power of London, because of the pull that it's got with signing players. But there does seem an air of positivity around Manchester at the moment. The two clubs, but if you look at City at the weekend as well, it was almost everything that Pep Guardiola wants his side to be. The two up front played well. The team behind them, they kept the ball. And Joe and I both watched the game. It was almost like a 90-minute keep ball session, really, wasn't it? But it was everything that Guardiola wants. So there is that air of positivity around the place at the moment.
Yeah, the one thing with City, I don't think they've kind of signed anyone that will fill the gap of company if he gets injured. So,
yeah.
Yes, he looked great at the weekend. He's had a good pre-season, but, you know, the last four or five seasons, he's broken down and he's been up for quite a long time. So you're probably worth reserving judgment on City until they have to play three or four games with, you know, Stones or Otamendi or somebody else, or, you know, Johnny Evans, has been mentioned today. So they have got a very strong starting 11, but they do look weak if key players get injured, people like Kompany. I mean, obviously up front, Aguero misses out, they've got Gabriel Jesus, so they've got strength in depth. The one thing for me that I just think that will be the key for City this year is that they're so strong going forward that they'll just kill teams the last 20 minutes. Mm. You know, the weekend, I think they put on Sane and Sterling, and you know, if you can put that sort of pace on in the last 20 minutes, you're going to destroy teams. So that'll be the key, I think, that where they can blow teams away.
Pep Guardiola said, we attack too slowly, we have to be a bit quicker, more precise, more accuracy in our passes. You mentioned there Sane coming on for Danilo, and it was quite striking as well just how right-footed Danilo is. And Mendy will certainly make a big difference, you would think, when he comes back. I'm curious, Mark, I don't know how much over the pre-season you've seen of the goalkeeper, Ederson. Certainly the Kompany issue is going to be crucial, but last season, particularly the early part, was a story of the Manchester City goalkeeper one way or another. Ederson's come in. I didn't see many of their pre-season games, none to be exact. But on first glance, Ederson fumbled a few corners and I thought, oh God.
Well, I mean, I saw 53 games at the States in his debut. His first game was against United in Houston, and the first goal he conceded, he basically raced out of his area, 40 yards out of his area, missed the ball completely, and Lukaku scored, and you're thinking, oh, here we go, it's another Claudio Bravo. So, but after that, he had a great game against Real and did well against Tottenham as well. And the one thing about Edison, he's got a bit more presence, and he's got this incredible kick. And Guardiola made a point of saying that when he was at Bayern Munich, he played Benfica, and they had a full culture meeting just to work out how to defend against his kick. So Pep said that he brought him in to help City attack quicker. So they are a bit more direct this year, that they've got this keeper who can, you know, launch it 50 yards, and he's precise as well. So it's long ball football, basically, from Pep Guardiola, but he'll spin it as a goalkeeper, a footballing goalkeeper, whatever you want to call it. But yeah, he has made a difference, and he's obviously got more presence and more, well, stickability than Bravo. So that's obviously a plus point and a positive decision.
Mark, we're just going to, the line is just a little bit dead, so we're just going to give you a ring back on your mobile there and get you back up in the line in 1 second, if you don't mind. That's Mark Ogden of ESPN talking to us. Ederson, they signed, by the way, for 35 million sterling. Their other signings, Kyle Walker, we know about at this stage, 45 million sterling. Benjamin Mendy, 51 million. Danilo, right-footed as he is, 26 million. Douglas Luiz, 10 million. And Bernardo Silva, who we didn't see at the weekend, 45 million. So that's a grand total of 193 million for City. It's hard to read too much into that Brighton game because Brighton didn't seem to have any pace on the counter-attack either. There was no real way they could have hurt them. Mark, you're back with us?
Yeah, I've got you back.
Great stuff. Oh, yeah, there's a bit better there. Mark Ogden of ESPN with us. We were just listening off the City signings there. In some ways, I mean, you couldn't read too much into that Brighton game. Brighton didn't really have any pace to hit them on the counter. The two times Brighton tried to play any football, they got stung straight away. It was that kind of a game. Pep Guardiola's general mood, because we're going to ask you about Mourinho, who seems to be back and tanned and happy again after a dreary year last year. How has Pep returned? We weren't too sure about his outfit. We liked the, was it white chinos, short with black socks,
it's got
the runners?
In the office today, Mark, mixed reviews from that one. I wouldn't be in favour of it, the trainers with the white chinos. I'm more of a traditionalist, but Joe and a few of the other lads quite liked Pep's gear, didn't you?
That was okay, yeah.
You should have seen what the players had to wear in America. They had, Pep had this white t-shirt and chinos, and they have these pump style trainers. That's for the staff. The players had to wear the white t-shirts, oversized khaki shorts and trainers, and they look like Boy Scouts, and it's like, what on earth, walking in the mix zone with these ridiculous trousers, these baggy trousers, like something about the 1950s. So
he had the Barcelona, Pep had the Barcelona boys in double denim all the time.
Yeah, and he had these horrible zips last season with black zips, like the something out of Happy Days in the Fonz. So he's got issues with his style, I think. But yeah, you know, on the pitch, he's certainly more eye catching. These clothes, the sartorial.
Yeah, and his general mood, like we saw, his lack of patience with the press as the season unfolded, and just becoming agitated quite often in interviews. Has he come back a more chilled out kind of character?
Not really. No, I mean, the one thing about the States that every club was, you know, with it being the States, they really push the boat out and make an effort to, you know, play games. I'll play ball with the local market. So, you know, I spoke to Mourinho, Pochettino did something, Zidane did something with Madrid. Pep wouldn't do anything beyond the press conference. It's almost like he's the Dalai Lama. He's treated with kind of reverence, but, you know, he's not allowed to speak to anybody, you know, independently. He takes himself a bit too seriously, I think. I think, and the club takes himself a bit too seriously. Well, I think sometimes Pep needs to lighten up a bit, show a bit of humour. And, you know, we were in the Coliseum in Los Angeles when they beat Real Madrid. I think it was 4-1, and it was a really intense performance by City, and I actually had a lift with some Spanish journalists. They were laughing and saying, why are they taking it so seriously? It's a friendly, it's a pre-season game. Madrid weren't even trying. And that's Pep Guardiola, is just ultra intense. And I think, you know, at some point last season it kind of got to the players a bit. I think they found it a bit overbearing. And I think this season as well, if he doesn't kind of take his foot off the gas a bit, he will be a bit too intense for the players. And I've not seen a sign that he's lightened up yet.
It suddenly tallies the extent to which he burnt himself out at Barcelona and had to take a sabbatical. So, I mean, there is that. It's certainly an issue for the players as well. Brief tangent, because I want to talk to you about Mourinho. So you got to sit down with Zidane.
No, I sat down with Mourinho. I'm just saying that the other managers, did their bit, but Pep didn't.
Okay, yeah.
And
the enigma that is Zidane, if you sat down with him, I'd love to hear what that was like. Here, by the way, is some Mourinho talking recently about the season.
This last question, are you enjoying this more than last summer? In terms of the facilities and the weather and the conditions?
I do. I always did. I was one of the first to come to the US in 2004, and since then I always try to come. But, you know, sometimes it's impossible. There are some other commercial stuff that we cannot forget. And sometimes the clubs, they need to go to Asia, which we did last season. And last season was really a bad experience, but now everybody is happy. The conditions are great and everything is going really well. So let's see if we can repeat next season.
That's him obviously talking to you, Mark, in your interview with him for ESPN. And so he sounds happier there. Clearly did not enjoy the Asian experience last year. And it was striking. We had the game here. Kev was on COCOM for us. And on television, it just jumped out. His pre-match interview, he was tanned. The hollowed out bags under his eyes were gone. And he stood on the sideline in his new white shirt. And he's wearing a suit again. And we can be superficial about these things, sure. But actually, it was a marked contrast to the dreary, frumpy, miserable Mourinho we saw at the start of last season.
Yeah, I mean, I think you can always judge his mood by his demeanour, can't you, and how he looks. And I think when he's unshaven, he's wearing a tracksuit and a tracksuit and he's scruffy hair, you know that there's kind of alarm bells ringing somewhere. So, yeah, he seemed up for it. And he's, you know, he's got a couple of moans. He's not happy with getting three players and he wants four. I think they probably need a fourth player, need an attacking winger maybe or something. Just gives a bit more. Because we've got people like Martial and Rashford playing on the winger, and I think, you know, Kevin will tell you, if you're a winger, you can put a cross in. Martial and Rashford aren't crossers, and if you've got Lukaku in your team, you need somebody who can put a cross in for his aerial prowess. So he is still wanting to get an attacking player, but I think he's giving up hope on that one because Inter aren't selling Perisic and they're not going to get Gareth Bale. So, yeah, he's happy enough, but he could be happier.
I know it's still early days, and this is the problem, I think, when you're trying to analyse United, because I think we're judging them on what we've seen over the last few years when it hasn't been great. At times last season there was good spells, don't get me wrong, but they lacked in so many different areas, whereas at the weekend it was a sign of intent straight away, went straight at West Ham, the way that they started the game. That was the standout thing for me when I was watching them, seeing Lukaku. But it was that combination. You've done a piece on Matic this week and his combination with Pogba. But Pogba as well has been quoted this week saying, look, last season was all about the transfer fee. That's the one that kept on level, being levelled at me. Now that's gone. It's out the window. Now I feel fresh. I feel good. And again, only one game, but there must have been so many different positives, even when you may be speaking to him in the last couple of days and everything, Mark, and even after the game, that positive feel you got from seeing Pogba play the way that he played, seeing Matic, seeing Lukaku, seeing Rashford. United looked a different animal this weekend, I felt.
Well, I mean, I've got a theory on that, is that, you know, when Mourinho was at Chelsea, Ferguson made a big point of saying that he changed the way United made preparations, because every season Chelsea would just go off like a steam train. They'd just pull away. They'd win five or six in the trot, and they'd set up a lead at the top of the table. And they were so ready in pre-season. Now, United had 8 pre-season games. I think most of us had 4. So they started against West Ham. They looked well ahead of West Ham. And I just think United are a much fitter stage than West Ham when I think that, you know, the place runs at the weekend, it might be the same again, but they just look much more down the track in terms of fitness, and that at this stage of the season is massive. I think Mourinho's idea is that if you can take advantage in the first month and get 4 or 5 wins, then that sets you up for the season. It puts you in the top 4, puts you maybe at the top of the table, and it gives you something to build on the platform. And I think that's what, you know, they haven't really had since Fergie left. So you know, if they can get 5 out of 6 wins before, you know, the first part 18 points, something like that, that sets up for the season, I think, and that will be because of the pre-season campaign.
Just in relation to those two though, particularly Matic and Pogba though, and the question that was continually getting asked when you were on with us last year as well, and the questions being levelled at being put to Mourinho, should I say, about Pogba, do you feel as though, do you get any indication when you've been speaking to Mourinho through pre-season that Pogba is going to come on for last season, he's going to get better? Pogba himself, if you've been speaking to him or if you've been hearing anything from around the club, do you feel as though that he will come on? Is that the indication that you've got from within the club as well?
And you should add, by the way, you know, we had Graeme Souness on the show last week.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Just doesn't think Pogba has the football intelligence to be a big, big success. Still, like, played well against West Ham, big deal. Matic there, not there, big deal. Just adamant that Pogba doesn't actually have what it takes from a football intelligence point of view to be a really top £90 million midfielder.
I think Graham's got a point there, and I think there is something about him that he does have 6 or 7 touches when 3 or 4 will do. I think at times he tries to be the star man, and I think, you know, he needs to learn that he does that less is more sometimes. I think, what is he, 24, 25? He has to learn that pretty quickly. But yeah, I mean, I think the view around the club is that he was almost kind of let down last year by the midfield options that he had, because when he was at Juventus, he was, you You know, he's playing in a team with people like Marquisiel and Pirlo and Vidal, and you know, players that would put the legwork in to let Pogba do his, what he's best at in the attacking third. Now, last year, United didn't have the bodies to do that, and he's not a defensive midfielder, but at times he's playing there alongside Michael Carrick.
Yeah,
you know, and Fellaini, and you know, the one thing that struck me about Matic at the weekend was that United were playing 15 yards further up the pitch because he was defending that much higher, and it obviously created protection for the back four, and it enabled him to intercept that ball for the first goal. Because Carrick, great player that he is, he hasn't got the legs anymore to do what Matic can do. So Matic has transformed the way United can play, and by doing that, he also makes a big difference to Pogba because he enables Pogba to get forward more, and knowing that Matic is behind him, mopping up and just taking care of business.
Okay, Mark, senior football writer, ESPN. Thanks a million.
Thanks, Mark.
Cheers, guys.
Cheers. Mark Ogden there with the latest from Manchester. Celtic 5-0 winners this evening, if you're just tuning in. Back in a moment.
Off the Ball on News Talk. Thanks to Air. Watch the Belgian Formula One Grand Prix live this August on the Air Sport Pack.
Welcome back. Never got your reaction before we go to the Scott Hogan news. So, kind of out of nowhere, really, where it seemed there was an impasse or just not much in the way of a development. Scott Hogan seems to have met with Martin O'Neill face to face down at it yesterday and convinced O'Neill, who certainly O'Neill said to the press on Monday, would have been wary of contaminating in any way a very healthy dressing room, but certainly convinced O'Neill he was very keen to play for the country.
Yeah.
You've seen him play a little bit?
A little bit, yeah, I have. Seen him play at Brentford prior to his move to Villa. It hasn't quite worked out the way he would like since he's gone to Villa. It's only one league goal since signing. He has had injury problems. He did do his ankle last season. He scored one League Cup goal against, was it Chesterfield, I think it was, last week? Colchester, maybe, I think, sorry, last week. So he's up and running this season, but I think you know what I'm like, Joe. You know what I would be like within it. He was, you know, potentially could have been called up over a year ago now. I feel as though it's unjust when Martin O'Neill continues to get asked these questions about maybe the likes of Scott Hogan or whoever it would be, because it's almost like that's his job to go and convince these players to come and play for us. Mm. I just feel as though that if he was totally committed to us, he would have committed himself over a year ago. That would have been done and dusted. But he has committed to us, so we have to support him for everything within that. But it does sit uneasy with me. It does,
It does, because it's fairly... look, you get him on the show sometime and ask him. But certainly Dan was saying there was an interview a while back, and certainly his agents or his people were suggesting maybe England might be on the horizon for him.
Yeah.
If we
That's the problem, isn't it?
If we go out on a limb here and put our own interpretation on things, then...
No, exactly.
The most likely thing is that he grew up in England. Maybe the plan, the ideal for him was to play for England, and maybe at this point in his career now he realises Ireland is a far more realistic option, so he's committed to Ireland. He's met O'Neill. He said the right things.
Yeah.
And I'm sure O'Neill's no mug, and so it's more than just some kind of act he's putting on. I'm sure
Martin O'Neill's duty is to pick the best players that's available to him. He's available to him now, so...
And it's perfectly possible he could take huge pride in representing Ireland as well, even if it is a second choice. You know? I mean, it's a very possible thing.
No, I don't deny that either.
And, you know, Gary Breen, Connolly, a handful of others are the exception.
There's only a few. Alan McLaughlin. Alan Kelly, maybe. That would have been it.
That might have been it. Okay, so you were the handful, quite literally, where Ireland was your first choice despite being born and raised in the UK.
Yeah.
And everybody else, realistically, ideal world, if they were good enough, they would have chosen England.
Yeah.
Invariably, Ireland manifested itself for whatever reason, and quite a lot of them did very well, and you just kind of have to live with that, don't you?
You do, but there's a way to do it. There's a way to do it that you said there, you mentioned there, which it seems to me, it does seem this is the way that it's been.
Yeah.
You speak to your agent, you speak to people who's advising you along the way. I'll take my time over that. Mm. What on earth do you need to speak to your agent about? What on earth do you need to take advice on? I mean, it's the truth the way that it is. You know what you feel, you know where you want to go, you know where you want to play. Now, it's a different scenario if, you know, you've got to 24, 25 and you've not had any call-up. All of a sudden, we can call him up, he can come and play for us. Mm. Delighted to come and jump on board, great. And to be fair to Scott Hogan, I wish him all the best, and I'll be the first one jumping up if he scored in one of the big games for us. There's no issue within that.
Yeah.
But the problem is, it's how he gets to his decision. That's the thing. We saw it with Jack Grealish. You've seen it with others that they've played for us, turned their back on us further down the line. And These are the issues that I have surrounding it all. You know where you want to play. You know what's in your heart. You know where your future lies in many respects. What on earth do you need to speak to your agent about? Why should you have any other notions of playing for any other country? It's got to be in your international football. It's got to be what's in your heart.
Mm. We'll have to leave it there for this evening. The winner of our competition was Orla McSweeney. €600 one for all voucher for you, Orla. Another chance for everyone to win tomorrow night. And remember, giving blood saves lives, so consider becoming a blood donor. See giveblood.ie to find your local clinic and follow hashtag missing type. We'll see you tomorrow. Tom Dunn on the way.
Off the ball on News Talk. Thanks to Air. Catch all the sports you love free on the Air Sport Pack with Air Broadband.